In life and in business, we often find it necessary to reinvent ourselves or our organizations. But what does it actually take to go through the process of reinvention and to come out of it successfully?
It takes curiosity to make a change like this. It takes a certain amount of courage. You know, you just don't want to take unwarranted risks. It's not like go after the next shiny object. I think you need to have a little balance.
That's Bill Novelli, founder of the Business for Impact program and the distinguished professor of the practice at Georgetown University's McDonough School of Business. Through the program, Bill partners with companies, nonprofits, and government to create social, environmental, and economic impact. Bill is a master at reinvention, having played an array of roles over his career, from co-founding his public relations firm, Porter Novelli, to serving as CEO of the AARP. Bill even co-founded an entire category of marketing to drive social change called social marketing. This perspective serves as the basis of his latest book, Good Business, The Talk, Fight, Win Way to Change the World. Bill began his career in marketing at Unilever in a New York advertising agency. Later, he led the repositioning of the Peace Corps as he transitioned into marketing for public service causes. Bill was the founder and president of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids and a senior executive at CARE, the International Relief and Development Organization. More recently, Bill co-founded and is co-chair of the Coalition to Transform Advanced Care, or CTAC, a national alliance focused on reforming advanced illness and end-of-life care. With each change along his journey, Bill has successfully moved forward through each reinvention by having a goal, courage, and sense of balance.
I had this revelation, which was that you could use marketing for causes and issues and ideas. And that was really what got me started in thinking about how to find that social relevance.
I'm Meryl McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and to gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. And now, Bill Novelli. Bill, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Meryl.
I'm so excited to talk to you because I know you just came out with a new book, your third, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I did come out with a book and, I'm actually kind of excited about it.
What an incredible life you've had. So I'm so excited to talk to you about it. But for all of our listeners, the book is called Good Business, The Talk, Fight, Win Way to Change the World. So that's a big task to change the world, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, what I'd love to talk to you about is one of the things you cover a lot in your book is the whole concept of reinvention. So few people have been able to reinvent themselves or their careers as much as you have. I know starting from all the way back your days in advertising to leading AARP and now as a university professor. And of course, many people know you as having been the founder of Porter Novelli, which is such an iconic public relations firm that started all about purpose. So what does reinvention really mean to you?
Well, I think it means two things, Meryl. Number one, I always like to think that I have a goal to pursue. And it can be, you know, as big as a career goal, which is what I try to think about, or it can be a smaller goal depending on the circumstances, but having a goal. And then the second thing that I think about is what I call renewal. You know, I don't like to get stale. I don't like to be in the same place too long. I think every organization needs new blood. You know, let's get out while we're on a high note, that kind of thing. So pursue a goal and have a sense of renewal.
And would you say you've had a similar goal throughout your career, or is that goal morphed or changed?
It has changed. It has evolved. You know, my original goal when I first started was the goal of my day, which was join a big company, climb the ladder, get into the corner office, make money, retire. That was the goal. And it morphed into what I think of today as my career goal, which is to make significant contributions to solving major social problems. So how I got from one to the other was the story of my journey.
And I know you're often considered the founder of sort of the whole idea of social marketing. Tell me about that. What led to that?
Well, you know, I started at Unilever, which is a great company. And in those days, you know, Madison Avenue was hot. And the idea was to work both sides of the street, as they called it. So one side was the client side. That's Unilever. And the other side was the ad agency side. So I went to this hot New York ad agency. And I was doing the same thing, selling packaged goods, marketing packaged goods. And it was a wonderful kind of a career. No heavy lifting. I had little kids. I was doing well. But Merrill, I had this problem, which was at the end of the day, I was having trouble finding any social relevance in what I was doing. I had this, I'll call it a revelation, which was that you could use marketing to promote packaged goods as I was, or you could also use it for causes and issues and ideas. And that was really what got me started in thinking about how to find that social relevance. And that was the beginning of this career change.
And what happened then? What was your next step?
Well, I thought to myself, how can I make this idea into a career? And then I had a piece of good fortune. I was on the train one day reading the New York Times advertising section. And the story said that the Peace Corps wanted to essentially reposition itself. And so my job was to help reposition the Peace Corps and attract that diverse kind of volunteer.
Wow. And for all those leaders who often wish they were working for the Peace Corps and really trying to find purpose in the organizations they're in, what really could you advise them in terms of how to inspire reinvention within your current organization or team?
Well, here's what happened to me. I thought to myself, you know, do I dare do this? Do I leave New York? Do I go to Washington? You know, can I try this? What if I fail? And so I thought to myself in hindsight, you know, it takes curiosity to do this, to make a change like this. The big question I've always wanted to ask myself, and I do to even today, is what's next? And the other thing, though, is it takes a certain amount of courage. And I credit my wife with this because I said to her, Fran, you know, we've got little kids. I've got a chance to go to Washington. This is a whole different world down there. It's a different gig. What do you think? And she said, let's do it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And the other day I was talking, one of the things that happened to me long after the Peace Corps was I lost a job that I really wanted to be the CEO of an organization. I talked about it in the book. And the other day I was talking to a colleague and he told me the same story that he lost a job that he really, really wanted. And in both cases, I thought to myself, you know, we failed. We failed at what we were trying to do, but we had the courage to keep going and to try new things. And I think that's part of what courage is.
No, it makes so much sense. You know, a lot of people talk about courage being not, it's not about not being afraid. It's about being afraid and moving forward anyway.
I think that's right.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So what I was curious about is what are the characteristics of people who really successfully reinvent themselves? And you already mentioned curiosity, courage, and the third one's probably having a really supportive spouse. What else?
I think there's maybe one other thing to think about, which is, you know, you just don't want to take unwarranted risks. It's not like go after the next shiny object. I think you need to have a little balance.
So talk a little bit more about the sense of balance. Like for those who are listening, wondering, well, what do you really mean there? Can you elaborate a little bit?
Well, I talk about this a lot with my students. I have these MBA students and also alumni, and I often hear from them and they say, do you think I should change jobs? Here's where I am. Here's the offer I've got. What do you think? And, I can tell that they're really almost seduced by this new offer. And what I try to do is I try to counsel them, you know, to make sure that it's the right choice for them. I want them to move if they think that that's the right opportunity, but I don't want them to move just for the sake of moving.
And how would you define the right opportunity? What are your checks that you'd be looking for there?
Well, it depends on where you are in your career, of course. But if you're in the first third, the first half of your career, you know, you're really looking, I think, to learn. You really want to work for a company, an organization, and especially an individual you think is going to teach you, is going to give you opportunities, is going to nurture you. A lot of this Gallup talks about it. They call it good coaching. You know, you want a coach, not a boss. And if you're not going to work for somebody like that, then I think it's the wrong place. And then, of course, after that, the key to it is, how high up the ladder do you want to go? Do you want to be the CEO? And if you do, what's it going to take?
And as you think about the characteristics for an individual to reinvent themselves, how similar would those be to characteristics of an organization reinventing itself? You know, we're seeing now, of course, so many companies going through transformation.
Yes, we're really seeing that. I think an organization has several reasons for reinvention. One of them is necessity. So when I was at AARP, you know, I went there for several reasons, but one reason was because the baby boomers were coming right into AARP's sweet spot. And so their big worry was, can we appeal to older people and these young boomers? Or do we need to be two different organizations? What do we have to do? What are we going to be able to do in the way of reinvention? So they had a necessity. And I think a lot of organizations have that today. And then along with that goes urgency. A lot of companies today need to change because the world is changing around them. But then I think the third area, Merrill, I think is having a big vision. So for me, an example of that is CVS Health. You know, some years ago, they stopped selling cigarettes because they wanted to be a health company.
Right.
And they didn't think cigarettes and health were compatible. But for them, that was only the beginning. They had this vision of being a health company. And so they virtually reinvented themselves. They repositioned themselves. They reworked the whole company around that vision. So to me, that was part of reinvention and an important part of it.
Yeah, you think they even went to the point of buying an insurance company with that?
That's right.
The whole CVS Aetna merger. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you just described three different kinds of transformation, but what are the characteristics then that help a company achieve that?
Well, I think leadership is very important. You know, it's very hard for a company to do this without a vision. Oftentimes, visions are created from teams, but I think you need a sense of vision, or else you're not going to have the direction that you want to go in.
In your book, you talk about commercial marketing driving business success, and of course, social marketing drives social change. And so much of social change is often driven by a movement. Can you talk a little bit about how you actually spark a movement?
Well, it's not easy. There are a lot of movements going on today, and movements are really hard to spark. And what you need really is a sense of purpose, as we were talking about before, but you need to build coalitions. Nobody ever stood up and said, I'm going to start a movement, and everybody followed suit. A good coalition, which can morph into a movement, requires all kinds of people being involved. You know, you've got to have a sense of being able to lead from the middle, from having others be able to lead as well. And so the idea of a strange bedfellows movement is an important thing to think about. And I want to give you an example. We started a movement, or let's call it a coalition, at AARP called Divided We Fail. And we had the Business Roundtable, which you know is the CEOs of the biggest companies in America.
Right.
We had a trade union. We had a small business, a big association of small businesses. And we had this giant consumer organization, AARP. And we would go up on Capitol Hill to lobby. And the members of Congress up there and their staffs, they would say to us, you know, you guys don't agree on much, do you? And we'd say, no, but we can agree on healthcare. And that's what we're here to talk to you about. And that was our North Star, and we were able to build a really effective coalition around it.
Yeah, it's so interesting because a lot of the research always shows that the most successful movements are small groups within the very large group that have their own agenda, but they find an overlapping purpose.
Yeah, I think that's true. But at the same time, you know, it's been said that the only thing that makes a difference is, you know, a small group with a purpose. But what I like to say is, I think that's true if that small group becomes a big group.
Yeah. And how did you find the other groups, or what were you looking for in terms of the characteristics of those with whom you'd partner?
Well, I believe that these big social issues and these environmental issues that we face today are way too big for endless combat. We need to get everybody at the table. And so when you're trying to look for a coalition, build a big coalition, you want to get people there who are not necessarily in agreement with you, but they have the same self-interest that you do. So, for example, one of the things we do at Business for Impact at Georgetown, and I talk about it in the book, is we have a coalition which is built around combating obesity and overweight. It's called the Portion Balance Coalition. And that all started when Nestle came to us. And Nestle said, you know, we want to work on obesity, but we don't want to lead the way here. We want you to lead it. And we'll give you seed money to start this up. And we have some ideas for strategies, but let's see what we can do together. And so today we have big beverage companies, soft drink companies, and food companies, academics, watchdog nonprofits, government, all sitting at the table. And truthfully, Merrill, they don't agree on everything. But we chose them because they were all invested in doing something about obesity. And it's a U.S.-based operation now, but we hope to bring it to international scale. And you know, Merrill, if I can add one more thing, what I like to say is when it comes to these kinds of things, you know, you don't want to have any permanent enemies. You want to have permanent values, permanent principles, but today's enemy could be tomorrow's ally. And so you got to get everybody together.
Are there specific roles each bedfellow should play?
Well, I think each strange bedfellow is going to come at this from their own vantage point, from their own special interest. But I will say one thing that relates to that, and that is the idea of team building. When we think about building teams, you know, unanimous agreement is not good. We need strange bedfellows even in teams. Naysayers, devil's advocates, people who are going to tell us what's wrong with our ideas. And of course, to make that work, you've got to check your ego at the door.
I would imagine there are times when you're having kind of heated debates or conversations. How do you actually lead the group through that to keep people focused on the common goal?
Well, you know, it depends on the subject area. The toughest negotiation I ever had in my life, and it's in the book, is negotiating with the tobacco industry. And so we tried to figure out, and it wasn't just us, it was attorneys general in states around the country. It was the American Cancer Society, the American Medical Association. But we were sitting at the table, and what really brought us together, even the tobacco industry, was enlightened self-interest.
So enlightened self-interest is something, of course, we've all heard about, and it sounds like a great term, but what does it really mean?
Well, I'll give you a good example. I learned this lesson early on. One of the first big clients we had at Porto Novelli was the National High Blood Pressure Education Program. And this was a government-run program at the National Institutes of Health. And we had a lot of different partners in that program. And one of them were a group of pharmaceutical companies. Now, you know, way back then, just like today, there was a bit of suspicion applied to the pharmaceutical industry. But they stuck to the guidelines, and they were good partners. And the reason why essentially was enlightened self-interest. They knew that every time we educated a physician or a consumer about hypertension, that is high blood pressure, they sold product. And so for them, it was doing well, that is making money, by doing good, that is helping people with high blood pressure. So that was enlightened self-interest. And that's what I look for all the time.
Thank you for articulating that. And I love the whole phrase of doing well by doing good, which, of course, is a lot of the theme of your book.
It is. It is. I'm really keen on it. And I tell you what, I think that our moment has come. More and more companies are figuring this out. They realize that, you know, the business model's changing, and they can make money for their stockholders by creating social value for the rest of us.
And it's another really good example of why companies need to change, right, and reinvent themselves is they're all, you know, or not all, but many thinking about how they can really create better social purpose. What do you see as the common thread between the companies that are reinventing themselves against a social purpose?
Well, I don't think there's necessarily a common thread. I think maybe one common denominator perhaps brings us back to what I said earlier about necessity. You know, a lot of these companies see the changes in the air. But there's another thing as well, Merrill, which is these MBAs I was talking about and these young graduates, these young careerists. You know, they want what they like to call purpose as well as a paycheck. They're looking for companies that they can take pride in, where they want to work, the companies that have a sense of purpose. And those companies know that to attract that kind of talent, which is very expensive to recruit and to retain, they need to provide that purpose to those employees. And I don't think it's just young people. You know, when I was at AARP, we had some research showing that there are more entrepreneurs over the age of 50 than under. So this is a country of entrepreneurs. It's a country of purpose.
So we've got people trying to reinvent themselves, organizations reinventing themselves, of course, all the social reinvention that we know is required. Do you see an intersection between those things?
I do. I think both people and organizations both want to create change. And, you know, creating change is one definition of leadership. And so you can apply leadership in your own personal life, or in a corporation or another kind of an organization. And you do need that vision. You need to be able to rally people around you if you're an organization. And I'm very keen on teams. I've never accomplished anything by myself. I think you can move mountains if you've got great teams. And so I think the ability to create change may be that common denominator.
And speaking of change, what's your next pivot?
For me, what's next is I'm going to focus on three favorite things, three things that I think are worthy of fighting the good fight. One is climate action, which I think is the existential threat of our time. We've got to do something about it. We've got to work on it. Number two is science and technology, which relates to climate action, of course. And number three is something I've been working on for 10 years, and that's advanced illness and end-of-life care. So those are my three what's next items.
Wow, you picked really small things to to go after as your next thing. Well, and so for other leaders who want to reinvent themselves, what one piece of advice would you give them?
Well, I think that one of the problems that we have is that we become complacent and we have too much security in our lives. And so I do think that having courage and curiosity and balance, you know, are ways to think about letting go of things, taking change as an opportunity, making change. So too much security to me can be a barrier.
And of course, you just said one of my favorite phrases, letting go, since letting go and lead is the subject of this podcast. So what is it you think leaders most need to let go of?
Well, you know, they need to let go of complacency. And they've got to ask themselves, just as you do or I do or any other person, you know, am I too secure? Am I too happy? Am I too complacent? Should I seek change? And I have felt that that's always stood me in good stead.
So I wonder, you know, I'm just thinking as listeners are listening to this, whether anyone's wondering, well, what's wrong with feeling secure or comfortable? That seems like a good goal.
Well, I think it's fine. I think it's fine, as long as you've reached your goal. But I think a lot of people settle for complacency or security, and they haven't reached their goal. You know, have you ever heard that old saying, what have you done with the dash? So in other words, it's going to be someday on our headstones, it's going to say, you know, Abraham Lincoln, 1807, 1865. And there's a dash in between those two dates. What did he do with the dash? And we can ask ourselves that same thing. And someday it's going to be on our headstone. So I think we should ask ourselves now rather than waiting.
That's an incredible piece of advice. And how would you really help someone think about how to get clear on that?
Well, I talk to my students. You know, I teach a course in leadership. And one of the things that I ask the students is, what's your purpose? What's your career goal? And they say, career goal, I'm 26 years old. And I say, it's okay, start thinking about it now. Whether you're 26 or 46 or 56, ask yourself, what is that goal? Can you articulate it? And if you can't, you got to keep working at it.
So, Bill, what I'm just really wanting to ask you so many things, but what do you think I should be asking you?
Well, one question you could ask me is, you know, that old proverbial, what keeps you up at night? In other words, what are you worried about?
Yeah.
If I may say so, I'm really worried about today's political climate in America. You know, we've got this toxic mess, Merrill, that nobody is sure what to do with. And I may be too much of an optimist, but I'm old enough to have lived through the Vietnam era. And I know how toxic that culture was. And there have been other times in America when we've had to live through strife like this. I'm thinking we're going to live through it. But I also think that we have to do our part. And I have a thought, which I call crossing the aisle. Well, Merrill, I think you and I need to cross the aisle with our families, you know, our churches, our synagogues, our workplaces. What we need to do, I think, is to cross the aisle and find things we can talk about. We can't just say, I can't talk to these people. We've got to foster change. That's what I worry about and what I think about.
You just left me speechless. I was just thinking, wow, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm thinking, like, it's interesting. There are now several organizations that are really working on how to facilitate dialogue. Like, there's the Dialogue Project that was started by Bob Feldman out of ICF Next, and now he has several organizations involved with him. I know Allstate has been fostering a whole series of conversations, helping people have conversations. And it is just really interesting to see the struggles that people are having getting past all of this, because I think it became so dramatic and symbolic in watching what's going on with our country.
Yeah, it has been. You know, I think the more organizations like that, the better. So I'm on the board at the Bipartisan Policy Center. And the word bipartisan is in their name for a reason. I talk about them in the book as well. You know, they are working really hard to try to, this is probably too grand a term, but reform government, you know, reintroduce civility into our government. There are plenty of others who are trying to do this as well. And it takes leadership, it takes fortitude, it takes all kinds of things, but we have to try.
And it kind of goes back to your earlier point of finding common ground with your opponents.
Yes, absolutely. You know, no common enemies.
Well, Bill, this was really terrific.
I just want to thank you. I really think the idea of reinventing yourself and your organization, those are big ideas. And I'm really glad you're pursuing this, and I hope our listeners will like what we've talked about.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
I'm so inspired by Bill's ability to continually reinvent himself and his organizations. So let's recap a few key learnings. First, be curious and courageous. Early in his career, Bill wondered how his work in marketing was impacting the larger society, and that got him thinking about using his craft to promote ideas and issues for social good, which became his goal. What's more, it takes courage to ask yourself the questions to articulate a goal. It also takes courage to keep going toward your greater purpose, even after you fail. Second, have a sense of balance. That is, weigh the opportunities against the risks when you're considering a certain move so that you don't fall victim to a shiny object syndrome. As an individual, for example, ask yourself, is this opportunity aligned with my purpose? Similarly, as a leader of an organization, ask, how does this potential change fit into my vision? Third, to spark a movement, you can't do it on your own as the leader. Movements are often the product of strange bedfellows. That requires building a good coalition, which can then morph into a movement with all types of people involved. So it's important for you to lead from the middle, to have others be able to lead as well. Lastly, remember that we're at a pivotal moment for our world and our work cultures. Business models are changing to include how companies can create not only high shareholder returns, but also social value. So if you have an idea or a social good in mind, be curious and courageous in pursuing it. that could be the beginning of a whole new you. Thanks again, Bill, for the enlightening conversation. Until next time, this is Let Go and Lead.